Hello there, and welcome to today's episode of the Easy EdTech Podcast. If we haven't met before, my name is Monica Burns. I'm a former New York City public school teacher, and I've been out of the classroom for a few years, leading professional development for educators and writing about all things EdTech on my blog, classtechtips.com. This year, we're celebrating the 10th anniversary of the blog, and there are a lot of exciting things in the works. From new music here on the podcast to a new look on the website, I can't wait to share everything with you. Before we jump into today's episode, a quick reminder. You can head to my website, classtechtips.com/podcast, for all of the show notes and resources from today's episode. And if you're listening to this episode on a podcast player like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Podcasts, you should see a link in the description that you can click on as you listen today, and it will take you to all of the resources I mentioned. This episode is sponsored by AMD, with a reminder about the Lenovo EDU community. Join this free platform to connect with education experts and watch inspiring, one-of-a-kind video content with your learners. Don't forget to check out some exclusive blog posts I put together for them. Head over to education.lenovo.com to sign up for free. That's education.lenovo.com. This week's episode is titled, How to Build Your Makerspace from the Ground Up with Caroline Habig. I am so excited to have Caroline on the podcast today. We first met in 2013 as fellow Apple Distinguished Educators. We're both part of the 2013 class of ADEs. And so we've known each other for a long time. And when Caroline's new book came out, this past year, I knew I had to get her on the podcast to talk all about maker spaces, maker learning, and you're going to learn so much from our conversation. I just can't wait for you to listen in. Here's me and Caroline chatting about maker spaces, maker learning, and her new book. Welcome to the podcast today. I am so excited to jump in and chat with you about this topic. But before we jump in, would you mind just sharing a little bit about your role in education and tell listeners what your day-to-day looks like?
Okay. So I'm Caroline Habig. I work full-time in a K-12 system, but I also work a lot with teachers all over the nation as well as beyond. And a lot of times that work has to do with how do we bring different elements of innovation into our learning environments, no matter if they're more traditional or whether they're more non-traditional. There's a lot of opportunity for us to really dive in and see how do we push our learners, engage our learners in different ways. And I'm really passionate about that work. And thanks for having me on the show.
Well, so excited to have you on. And as I shared in the intro, we've known each other for a while. We're fellow Apple Distinguished Educators and I chat a lot about technology in general. But today, our focus is on this concept of maker learning. And that might be a term listeners have used or have heard or are revisiting. But can you explain to us exactly, you know, what exactly is maker learning?
So I always appreciate this question because I actually think maker learning, for different reasons or another, means different things to different people, or they visualize different things when they hear the term maker learning. But for me, it's really about how do we bring learners into that design thinking process? How do we engage them with these authentic questions and challenges where they then are able to develop authentic possible solutions and then prototype those solutions, gain feedback, and then launch those ideas to an authentic audience, whether it's their peers, their families, organizations they partner with, or well beyond.
I love your emphasis on the authenticity piece. And I think, you know, I know from a lot of the conversations I've had with educators in different parts of the country, different parts in the world, I'm sure similar to conversations you're having, is just around this idea of rooting things that are happening in classrooms in relevant,
meaningful experiences for students, really thinking about engagement in a different way to have things connect to what students are passionate about or the problems that they are observing and want to talk about a little bit more. So, you know, I'm curious, how did you get started exploring this topic of maker learning?
So actually, several years ago, I started working for a different school district and full time. And in addition to like rolling out one-to-one technologies, and at the time, you know, Google Apps for Education and iPads and Chromebooks, the superintendent said, "Hey, Caroline, I want you to put makerspaces in every building." Mm-hmm. And I said, "Wow, that sounds really exciting. But can we actually take a moment, step back, and work our way into what is maker learning? What is design thinking? How does it support the work we're already doing?" Because as we know in education, there's so many different needs our students have and roles that teachers are working to fill, that I thought it was important to find that meaningful connection even within our system and find those aligned pieces. So it wasn't one more thing. It was really, what are ways to heighten engagement and explore curriculum through a new engaging lens to some people? And so I appreciate the fact that he had the excitement for it. But like a lot of people, I see they start with the things, they start with the space. And I know we'll unpack some of that later. But it's more important to look at, what do we want learning experiences to look like for our students? What does experiential learning look like in different ways? And how is our curriculum a way to invite students to ask questions mm-hmm. and consider possible authentic solutions? I mean, what can they come up with within the constraints of either that they're given or in which their learning environment has as well?
That's such an important point you made, just about how sometimes new initiatives feel like they could be, you know, over here, right? We're on Zoom as we're talking, even though people are going to listen to this, right? I'm just like pointing in the other direction. So, right, something that's not necessarily rooted in all the work that we're already doing can feel very detached, I guess, is what I'm getting at. So I love how your emphasis there is just on rooting it in what we know is important, what we truly want to accomplish, and that idea that this is maybe a layer or something that helps go deeper into these pieces that are already so important.
Absolutely. It's a process that students can engage in and teachers can scaffold and support to really take eyes to our curriculum and get kids asking those questions. And I know different curriculum and different standards at different levels often invite students into that deeper thinking and questioning. And I think design thinking is a perfect match as a way to provide a process for students to engage in that type of thinking. And I think it's also very timely because it allows students often to explore different technologies, different capacities and resources as they engage in that inquiry and design thinking process.
Yeah. And just that idea that, you know, there might be something that comes along that is going to help a student along that process doesn't mean that a teacher needs to be an expert in that coding platform or that they need to know all the ins and outs of that movie making tool, but that, you know, the root of what they're there to do is to support and facilitate those experiences. And, you know, of course that can happen in a physical classroom setting or a distance learning setting, mm-hmm. or when we think about a teacher perhaps with a group of students. But let's talk a little bit about maker spaces, since I know, mm-hmm. you know, that's a term that often comes next when we talk about maker learning. What exactly is a maker space?
So when it comes to thinking about maker spaces can emerge in a variety of ways and take a lot of different forms. I think when we talk formally about maker spaces, they tend to be flexible, adaptable in terms of the type of space available for kids to work. So for example, traditional classrooms, sometimes depending on your school, you may not have the space to store all your ongoing prototypes. You may not have the materials or technologies accessible enough to have in every classroom, or certain technologies such as 3D printers actually benefit from not being moved around a lot in terms of, you know, precision and longevity. And I think really a makerspace should be a place that obviously provides tools and capacities and resources and materials that allow students to be able to spread out, work collaboratively or individually, be able to make and test and evaluate their prototypes in a variety of forms and modalities. I think they should be high tech and low tech, and we can get into some of that later, but ultimately it should be an environment that encourages students to be able to stay organized in terms of having a plan, having a purpose. I always say to every student should always be able to say, what am I making? Who am I making for and why? I think that helps also when you're in a makerspace, when there is so much going on and there are so many opportunities of things to do, keeping kids grounded and focused, I think is an important piece. And really, I think outside of, you know, traditional classrooms, I think makerspaces do afford us more flexibility and agility, oftentimes from what I've seen. And they also increase opportunities for access to these types of high and low tech resources. And I also think that because they often tend to be shared spaces, it's a way to not only engage in learning by doing, but also helping all students to have access to different technologies and modalities that support the design thinking process, rather than maybe just one classroom that they go to, or they do it in a certain curricular area. I think it also invites more diversity in terms of how teachers bring in maker learning, and having a space that's open, inviting, and shared can be also be a way to do that.
I love what you mentioned just about some of the advantages of having a dedicated space in a building, if that's possible, or a shared space that someone can go with a group of students and go and visit, because, you know, sometimes it feels like an extra thing or another thing that someone at a school might take on. But those advantages you mentioned might align with a school or district's goals around collaboration, social emotional learning emphasis that they might be placing a little bit more on this year too, just to build that collaborative capacity.
And one thing I just want to add on to that is I'm also a big proponent of using shared maker spaces as a way to model instructional practices with and for teachers and students. And I think when you have a makerspace, you have that opportunity. And I think sometimes people don't see it that way, but there's certain things that you can do in terms of setting up your makerspace to support teachers as well as learners in that space.
Yeah. And, you know, it's so interesting too that you mentioned this idea of really coming back and back and back to like, what's your purpose? Who are you making this for? What problem are you trying to solve? Because, you know, as an adult walking in, and I visit, just like I know you do, spend time in lots of different schools, right? So, you know, I might walk into a makerspace in a building I've never been to before, and I can't take my eyes off the Lego wall, even if someone's talking to me at the same, like, it's so easy to just get distracted because you're excited about what you see, right? As even an adult walking into a space. So as a student, just bringing them back to their purpose, even though there might be a lot of things going on around them that are exciting, is so crucial. So, you know, you mentioned a little bit about starting a makerspace or what you might take into consideration. So, you know, are there steps that you recommend to people? Like, what do you need to do in order to start a makerspace? And if you don't have anything yet, you know, what's the first thing you would need to do?
So the very first thing, and I know I said this before, is always become clear and deepen your understanding and those around you, who, if they're on this journey with you, whether it's your students, whether it's other colleagues, to really unpack what that design thinking process is. Because I think when you start to think about, oh, it's students either being presented with or identifying a problem to solve or a challenge, you know, what are ways we can support collaborative brainstorming and the sharing of ideas, or the moving around of ideas, whether it's digital or, you know, literally physically with post-it notes. What are ways that then when you're not only brainstorming potential problems, but then also potential solutions, you know, are we, do we have opportunities within the space that support that kind of learning? And then moving more towards making, which I think is really living in that prototyping element of design thinking and thinking about what are high and low tech modalities that students can use to build rapid prototypes and know that they can, like I said, take place with raw materials or they can take place just completely digitally. There's different types depending on what the problem is that they're solving, making sure that students have access to those resources and are they able to navigate them and access them? So thinking about how your makerspace might be set up, you know, do we need storage? Do we have a place where kids can keep prototypes? Do we have ways to allow learners and educators to think about what digital prototyping can look like as well? And I think also having opportunities to really think through your space in terms of how you can continually bring it back to those bigger questions. So for example, I'm a big fan of having the design thinking process visible in your makerspace with some key criteria, which, you know, where are we in this process that kids can identify with, having your designers can, your learning intentions visible. I know it's so old school, but it's important in this space. I think another thing that I personally, you know, as you're starting to think about this, you know, think about what do you want in an ideal world? And in the book, we talk about strategies for like, in an ideal world, what would you see? What would you hear? What would it look like to have an inclusive learning, maker learning environment? And then build off of that. I'm also a fan of if you are getting input from people around you or other stakeholders, mm-hmm. have them think through priorities in terms of categories. So how big of a priority is storage? How big of a priority is furniture? How big of a priority are certain technologies and, you know, raw materials? And I think instead of getting everyone in the weeds, I think it's good to think through those categories. And once again, always aligning it to what is our big picture vision of how kids engage in design thinking.
Gosh, that idea of the priorities and the categories, I think, is such a great way to frame planning conversations with stakeholders, just to get people focused in on one big area to talk about. That's huge. Now, I know that you are connected with ISTE. All right, if someone's starting from the ground up, are there communities, maybe within ISTE, maybe on social media or Facebook groups or whatever it might be, like, are there communities of educators they could connect with or people they can find to help them as they're starting from the ground up?
Absolutely. I think once you define, or not even once you define, maybe if you're just dipping your toe and you're like taking it in before you can even define what this work looks like in your school system. I think there's a lot of groups and opportunities out there, you know, ISTE for sure, starting with the standards and then looking at their professional learning networks are very active. I think obviously there's a lot of different Facebook groups out there, whether you're focused on STEM, a lot of times those also have different avenues into supporting maker learning and people who are energized by those conversations. And I think, you know, just looking at all the different ways to connect with different resources as well as people, I think there's a lot of avenues that can, as long as I would just encourage people that as you're doing that, kind of go in trying to really think about what is our why. Okay. And for the work that you're doing and then draw and all from all those different aspects. And I think then you can come together with a more cohesive plan, whether it's for a district or your classroom, either way.
That's really helpful too. And just even that idea of saying it might not be someone who's in a role of transforming a district's maker space, but it may be a classroom teacher who's looking to incorporate more maker learning, more design thinking into their work. So, you know, you have a new book that's all about this topic. I have a copy here in my office. Where can readers find your book? What will they find inside of your book? Can you tell us a little bit about it?
So it is published by ISTE. So obviously you can get from the ISTE website. I actually know there, you know, sometimes if you're a member, there are some deals here and there. Mm-hmm. Also, obviously Amazon or other places that you tend to buy your professional books and among other things. And the thing that excites me about the book is that it's a playbook. And I intentionally went in with this idea that, you know, we all have a lot going on. And there's a lot of things you can find that say, oh, do this or do that, mm-hmm. but they don't really tell you how. And I wanted to think about this from the two lenses, the lens of a school system, whether you're a district or a building leader, or whether you're leading this work within your classroom or your collaborative team. You know, what are ways to get started from the ground up? And then if you're even already someone who's heavily involved or you have a lot of things already going and taking place, what are additional resources you can use to create inclusive learning experiences within your makerspace or maker learning environment? And something that I'm really happy about is all the strategies and resources have reproducibles. They're like Google Docs that people can either grab and go or modify, because I know we all have different needs.
Yeah.
And then a lot of resources to help create inclusive learning, or even like, for example, grab and go check for understanding cards that can support a wide variety of, like, there's like 30 prompts that you can choose from to check in with kids at different points during that learning process, design process. So having pre-created things that you can put in your maker learning environment or makerspace ready to go. Also, something as simple as collaborative cleanup job cards, which are so needed often when you have a shared space. Those little things that we don't always have time to make or recreate, but how can we have those already in our space? So a lot of things like that, but then also various activities that support every distinct phase of the design thinking process for students. So all the way from resources to help teachers construct a design challenge, to how do you start to build initial understanding when you're presenting students with that challenge, all the way to then walking them through that prototyping process. Say we have prototyping checklists, sketching checklist, because I think always sketch before you make. And having this book be a resource that I think has, you know, kind of something for everyone, mm-hmm. depending on what role you are, what phase you are in this work, is something I'm really proud of. And I want people to have this be a learning by doing experience when they read the book. And I think there's a lot of things there that people can sort through and take from.
Well, I absolutely agree. Having seen the book, right, held it in my hands, all of that, just I'm always looking for actionable resources. And I think that your playbook really falls into that category. So thank you so much for your time today. For anyone listening, I'll make sure to link out to the book and all the information to stay connected and learn more about your work. But where can people go if they do want to connect with you or learn more about what you're up to?
So I'm always excited to work with people in any capacity, people who I, you know, meet in different ways. But if you want to contact me on Twitter, or if you end up with the book, you'll also find a link. And I think Monica will probably share it out later. We do have a Facebook group where, you know, there's people who have the book or have been in a presentation join, and we try to have like active examples or resources, or people can ask questions in a variety of ways. I think this work's exciting, and I like just connecting with people at whatever phase they are in the work and different ways to do that.
Oh, wonderful. And thank you again so much for your time today.
Thank you.
It was so much fun having Caroline join in on the podcast today. I hope if you are interested and excited about makerspaces that you'll grab a copy of her new book. It is very actionable, lots of great information, and something that can help you wrap your head around this idea of maker learning and how to build a makerspace from the ground up. Let's finish up this episode like we always do by making this EdTech easy. First, focus on your why. Next, bring learners into the design process. Then, make authentic connections. And finally, start small and establish a foundation. Remember, you can find the show notes for the episode with all of the resources and tools we talked about today by heading to classtechtips.com/podcast. You should also see a link if you're listening to this on Apple or Spotify or Google Podcasts that says show notes below, and it'll take you out to the page on my blog that has all of the extra info from today's episode. This episode is sponsored by AMD with a reminder about the Lenovo EDU community. This free platform lets you connect with education experts and find videos and articles on educational content. You can sign up for free at education.lenovo.com, and you'll even find some exclusive blog posts I put together for them too. That's education.lenovo.com. Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. If you're listening to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or another favorite app, don't forget to hit the follow button. When you follow along with the podcast, each new episode will download for you automatically so you don't miss a thing. And if you have a moment today and are feeling extra helpful, please leave a 5-star rating or a short review for the podcast. It helps other educators find this podcast when they're searching for topics like EdTech in their podcast app. If you're listening on Spotify, the rating option is new this year. So if you haven't looked for it, you can find the stars right underneath the episode title and you can tap and leave a rating there as well. Have a great week and check back on Tuesday morning for next week's new episode.